Hello and welcome. I'm Sam Harris, and it is my true honor and pleasure to host you here on the Growth Mindset podcast. I talk to amazing individuals about how they achieve their dreams and break down the strategies it takes to lead explosive tech businesses to being paid to travel the world. I deep dive into topics such as Bitcoin and fintech, or just how to get stuff done, with the goal of increasing our own collective wisdom and making us all happier, healthier, and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? Hello. Today we have a podcast I've been excited to record for a very long time, and I'm very happy to be finally releasing it. So this is an interview I recorded in North Korea on the 38th floor of the Yanggakdo Hotel, which is located on its very own island in the center of the capital city, Pyongyang. So I visited North Korea for 5 days over Easter this year to see the country and extensively tour the capital city, as well as visit the demilitarized zones and some of the countryside. It was a really amazing experience to see a country that I'd heard just so much about in the news and read books about, and just to be able to challenge all my preconceptions about it and to see how a nation can live without much influence or interaction from the rest of the world. In the interview, I'm talking with our Western tour guide, who is Ben, and from Australia. We talk about a variety of things, as well as North Korea. So the reason I didn't talk about just North Korea is that I was expecting to talk with one of the actual Korean guides as well, where I'd planned to really deep dive into the North Korean history and how they live and their ideologies. I didn't discuss this exclusively with Ben, as there were other things to go into, like life being a tour guide and the areas of dark tourism and why someone would want to become a tour guide for something as crazy as North Korea, rather than just talking about North Korea itself. So I'm sorry if you feel like I'm going off on a topic that isn't the high priority of North Korea history or whatever. But we generally cover lots of stuff that I thought was all interesting. So hopefully you enjoy the podcast too. Now, a few things to know before the podcast. I did the tour with a company called Young Pioneers Tours, which does often get abbreviated to YPT most of the time. So if you hear that, it's just the name of the tour company. And we do discuss nuclear weapons at one point, and it might sound like I'm really glad and happy that North Korea built nuclear weapons, which I'm fully against the idea of anyone having nuclear weapons. So I just like to point that out beforehand. And yeah, basically when you meet the North Koreans and you realize they're just nice people going about their lives, it just seems quite oppressive that they've achieved anything and you can be happy for their successes. So the discussion where we talk about the nuclear weapons, the topic moves pretty fast, so it might just sound like I'm saying, oh, it's great North Korea has nukes, when what I mean is it's nice that North Korea can be happy for themselves, although it's maybe bad that they have nuclear weapons. So on that note, I think we're all prepped and ready to go. Oh yeah, one more thing. As I've been having issues with my sound in this interview is not perfect. I will admit it was not recorded on a optimal device. I now have a much better set of microphones, but sadly I didn't have them with me in North Korea. And if you do not like the sound quality, I'm very sorry. Future episodes will have much better sound quality, and hopefully it's sufficient for you to listen and find interesting. Okay, here we go with the interview. Thanks for agreeing to the interview, and welcome to the Growth Mindset podcast.
Happy to be here.
Can you briefly introduce your name and job?
Yeah, so my name is Ben Johnson, and I'm a guide for Young Pioneer Tours. So Young Pioneer Tours is a travel agency that takes people to destinations your mother would rather you stayed away from. So the main place we go is North Korea, but we also do tours all throughout Russia, Eastern Europe, Cuba, Eastern Africa, the Middle East, just basically anywhere where people think is kind of scary to travel to, we will try and take people there.
Okay, that's kind of cool. How did you end up working for them?
So originally I went on a tour with YPT it's over 2 years ago now, just as a tourist. And I kept in contact with them. I thought, well, this could be something interesting. And then I actually went back to Australia and worked as a tax consultant for almost a year with Ernst & Young, and that kind of drove me a little bit crazy, and I wanted to get out of Australia, and so contacted YPT, and then they said, yeah, they might have some work for me, so I did a bit of an internship with them in China, and then I started doing tours with them. I got quite lucky, because I'm a Mandarin speaker as well, so they needed me to help out with a few things.
So you already knew Chinese, and did you know Korean at the time, or did you have to?
I knew already a little bit of Korean as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of a bit surprising. What would you say surprises people the most when they come here?
how normal things are. Like going through the city, I think a lot of people expect it to be a bit of a circus, and in some ways it kind of can be, but when you drive through the streets of Pyongyang and you see people doing a normal 9-to-5 job or taking their kids to school, they're like, what are they doing? It's like, oh, that woman's walking her dog. They're like, oh, okay. Yeah. And so that's probably what gets them the most. They're like, but the media said that everyone here was crazy and wants everyone in America to die.
Yeah, it's like, you seem to expect a lot of people to be like fully brainwashed or something. You're like, oh, they're just normal people.
Yeah.
Sure, they haven't heard some parts of them, but
even the news here says pretty much the same stuff as a lot of the same stuff our headlines do. If you turn on the TV here, it's like the recent stuff in the news about the meeting with Kim Jong-un and Xi Jinping, that was all over the news the same time we had it. Like, they're not fully shut off as much as people think.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I've noticed, or the biggest three things, is that there's no, like, advertising for Coke or something along the roads. It's all just advertising for the president, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Then there's, like, hardly any cars on the roads and loads of bicycles, which is also really nice. Robert, the last thing was that everyone's quite skinny. There's no fat people anywhere.
No, that's common throughout the whole country, even in Pyongyang. Yeah. That's one thing. When we get larger customers as well, the Koreans find it quite funny because they don't really see it. But I do know a few fat North Koreans. It's not like that it doesn't exist. They definitely exist. But yeah, it's not just not as common, but it's the same as going to a place like Cambodia as well. Like, people there, just based on their diet and how much they're working and everything. Yeah, like, they just are burning more. And they do not eat as much meat as we do as well. Like, a lot of it is very vegetable-based because meat is, like, essentially a luxury.
Yeah. What do you wish people knew before they came?
it'd be good if people, like, looked at the instructions a bit more. But I don't know. I think it's also good people coming in with a bit of an open mind.
Yeah.
Really don't like it when people come in, like, with a kind of negative purpose. Like, we've had some people come on tour, basically come to see how crap it is come to see how much of a shithole the country can be. And you get those people, and if you do want to see and look for the cracks, you'll see them. It's like, it's a developing country. There's cracks everywhere, but in comparison to other developing countries in the world at the same kind of level. Like, Pyongyang is a shining beacon. It's not like downtown Phnom Penh where there's rats and rubbish all over the street. And although I do love Phnom Penh, it just doesn't have the glitz and glamour that Pyongyang has. And when you get those people that you'll try and explain things about the city, and they'll be like, yeah, but look, this building's falling apart, or hey, the hot water stopped running in my room or something. And it's like, you really just have to take into context and remember where you are. And so when people come in with an open mind and they expect these things to kind of, like, that could come up, that happen, that often do happen in a developing country, that it's so much better.
It's quite similar to Kazakhstan in that sort of, as in Astana is, like, it's really developed, like, it's a capital city, and then the rest of it's,
but you look, you go into the back streets, like Kazakhstan. It's a great example of Kazakhstan. Like, Almaty is fantastic city. You go outside Almaty, it's a very different place. It's just like, there's nothing there. There's no running water outside of Almaty.
I guess I found it quite surprising, talking about having an open mind. It's quite nice to hear the Korean side of everything. I think I was talking to one of the guys who was like, after hearing them, he's like, it's quite nice that Korea built their own nuclear weapons and like standing up to US. And like, okay, maybe building nuclear weapons wasn't the best thing, but it's sort of nice that they're kind of doing their own thing, I guess.
It's because they don't really have any other choice, really.
You see it from their view and you're like, okay.
Like, obviously not all things I will agree with that is said, but that's, like, political differences and all of that. But it is good, like, there's so many things here that they tell you about the Americans that cannot possibly be false. Like, when we go to the War Museum and we see the spy ship that was captured, like, obviously the U.S. had sent a spy ship in. And it just shows that there are these things that the U.S. is doing. We all know that the U.S. is doing these things to other countries, but I think it's kind of funny how North Korea showcases them to the world and, like, kind of puts them on it's like a big sore, like a thorn in America's side. Be like, yeah, come on, you never defeated us. Look, and we have this of yours. We know you're still doing it. Here's the proof. But as America just manages to make North Korea just seem not legitimate at all. So whatever they say, no one believes them.
It does feel a bit like North Korea's whole goal is kind of being against America, whereas America's sort of really like, thinking of.
I think North Korea just kind of wants to be like, they just want their own sovereignty. They want to be like Korea again. And the biggest obstacle in their path doing that is the fact that the southern part of Korea is occupied, or in their eyes, it's occupied by American forces.
What do you think about, have you been to South Korea? Right?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times to South Korea.
What's the South Korean sentiment?
A lot of South Koreans also want reunification. Mm. Yeah, but as time goes on, just as it did with Germany, less and less people in the South want reunification the longer the time goes by, because the cost of the idea of it is just astronomical. Even Germany is still kind of paying off the effects from it, and that was in the 80s. And they say that Korea's one will be upwards of $1 trillion, which is insane. Like, and South Korea is a major economy. And then think about what would happen if freedom of movement of people did come to DPRK, and then if you'd have a refugee crisis in China, if you'd have a refugee crisis in South Korea, even in Japan, of all these people just doing it all, it would take years to kind of mend the country together to reunify it fully. And we can use Germany as a little bit of a benchmark, but this one is so unprecedented. Yes. They've been apart for so many years now that it's just,
so much different development. And it's kind of like, you know, like the Aztec tribes where they're like, oh, we should never go like talk to them or show them a mobile phone.
Yeah, but here it's a bit different. Like, they have their own mobile phones as well. Yeah, they have smartphones. Like, they have very good technology, actually. Like, it's surprising. Like, the sciences in DPRK are actually fantastic. Yeah. Like, they're one of only, I think, 10 countries in the world to ever launch their own satellite. They've successfully made their own nuclear program. They've successfully made their own intercontinental ballistic missiles. And the fact that they've done that under extreme heavy sanctions is pretty amazing.
But it's not a huge population, though.
It's 24 million people, which is, it's the same as Australia, pretty much.
Yeah.
We are by size, but population's about the same. Huge. Yeah.
But also a lot of them, do you know the ratio of how many people are in the army?
I don't know exact figures on that one, but I think
I heard it was like the highest.
I'd say it's extremely high. Yeah.
I can come back and just edit that. Yeah. they had this many people in the army. Yeah, it's cool. So what drew you to North Korea in the first place?
It's a good question. I studied political science at university for my undergrad, and I'd been to a few kind of, I was originally really interested in the Middle East and everything that the media says about Iran and all the anti-US stuff that comes out of Iran, and obviously all the anti-Iranian sentiment that comes from Australia, the UK and the US. And I had a friend that went, and he said it was absolutely fantastic. And so I was like, okay, did my research into it, looked into it, and I was like, this would be cool. Looked into North Korea a bit as well, but I was like, oh, maybe I'll still clear of that one. Then went to Iran with one of my friends. We did like a trip through the Middle East, and it was the friendliest place I'd ever been, and it was absolutely amazing. And so after that, then I looked into North Korea, and then found a tour that was an all right price, and headed over. And I just kind of fell in love with the place, because it was just, it is weird.
It's really nice, strange.
It's bizarre. And just to like really see it for yourself is such a cool experience. Also, it's a beautiful country as well. Like, I've now traveled through so much of the country, in the mountains and through to the different seasons. It's just absolutely stunning.
Just going back a little bit on
the
patient side, how do you think it's possible that it happened?
I think there is a possibility it could happen, but I think it would, I'm not sure that I could see it in my lifetime. Or if we do see it, it will be some sort of like a kind of China-Hong Kong situation where you have one party, two systems type
thing. Yeah, there's sort of, they talk a lot about stuff should still stay the same in terms of idea. This looks like they live on the upgrade conservative list, but then saying they should agree on everything.
On certain things. And I like the idea of the Koguryo Federalist Republic, which is what is the plan under the three charters of reunification that we learned about today. And like how they would remain a neutral state. I'm not sure how well a state would work if it had a socialist north and a capitalist south, but I really don't know how to comment on it. Things change here so quickly. Like the political atmosphere over the past year, like it'll be the brink of nuclear war, and then it'll be, everyone's friends again. Let's have like concerts and meetings between leaders. And then in another 6 years, when there's different presidents in their respective countries, everything just goes to crap again.
Yeah, so it felt like they're quite proud of the fact that they have nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I would be too if I did it in their situation. I mean, it's one of the main things, I've really wanted is to get some legitimacy from the international community. And since they've developed nuclear weapons, people can't exactly turn a blind eye towards the DPRK.
Yeah, suddenly. Do you think they'd somehow become dear and more relaxed if they didn't have Unification Korea in terms of...
It's already happening. Like, we've already started to see tourist numbers rise up. Like, people have kind of stopped listening to their media a bit in terms of travelers, or there's just more people in the Western world that are willing to travel to more off-the-beaten-path locations. Definitely. So North Korea, and because North Korea gets in the media so much, people look it up, and hopefully through even some of our advertising, people will see that, actually go to North Korea and do things like the marathon is like a big draw, I think, that draws people in.
Do you think just the effect of like every one person that comes to YPT
has a trickle down effect
on Facebook? And
I definitely think it does. We get a lot of returning customers who are friends of people who have been on tours. But definitely.
So what do you have to do on the internship?
Basically like an internship period. So it's like some admin stuff. You do like a trainee guide course thing where you come in with YPT with another guide, and you see how the tour is run, see like the behind the scenes stuff, like just with... It's kind of boring, just with the documentation. Sorting out visas, the documentation, and things like that. Yeah.
So you did an internship, and then you basically...
And then just came on to them. I like started doing an internship with them, and then I got put on a bunch of tours where they needed me, or they needed a Chinese speaker. Got a lot of long tours, and then there was a few where they needed a Russian speaker, and my Russian's okay as well. So ended up, doing some interesting border crossings with like China and Kyrgyzstan, and then running a tour in Siberia. And then, just basically ended up full time with them.
Yeah, so many different things to talk about there.
Yeah.
I guess it would be nice to go through just like some funny stories. Like,
I have a great one about Belarus, actually.
Go for it.
So... So we're catching the train from Belarus to Minsk, and there was a slight mistake on three of the customers' visas whereby they accidentally overstayed their visa by 3 hours by the time we got to the border of Ukraine. And Belarus being very new to tourism and very bureaucratic, it meant these customers semi-got detained. The Belarusians were very much like, we're doing this because we have to, but we don't want to, but come over and we'll fill in this useless paperwork. And I was like, okay, well, can I go with these guys to sort them out? And they were like, why do you want to come? It's like, because I'm the guide and I'm traveling with them. And they were like, but you're not Belarusian. I was like, yes. And they go, why do you want to come? How do you know these people? And so I explained and then basically said to them, ask them, do you speak English? And the guy just looks at me and he goes, okay, grab your bag. And so we're sitting in the middle of this swamp in southern Belarus, in the middle of nowhere. And the train border is nowhere near the land border. It's about 40 kilometers away. So there's no way we can just sort out the documents and just walk over the border. So we're there for like 5 hours of me just like, we're filling out useless documents. No one knows what it says. It's all in Belarusian. Just smoking cigarettes with the guards. They're just as bored as we are. And they said, okay, we're going to arrange transport for you. And this is where it started to get really funny, because we were like, we have no idea how we're going to get to Kiev. And they rocked up in this old Soviet military jeep with two soldiers in the front with an old Nokia phone playing music in the front. And so they crammed four of us into the back with all our bags, and we're driving 60 kilometers an hour down these dirt roads in the middle of nowhere Belarus. And the guy is playing Hadaway's What Is Love. The soldiers were like 18 years old. We had had no sleep the whole night, sitting in the back down this bumpy road with these two soldiers, and all you can hear is, what is love, baby, don't hurt me. And so we're just like, what is happening? So we finally get to the Belarusian border, and the Belarusians are just like, all right, get out, cool, you're done, cool, that's fine, thanks, guys. And then they're like, okay, go to Ukraine. And we're like, well, where is the Ukraine? And they're like, it's 2 kilometers that way. Do you have legs? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, okay, go, walk. And so it was like 3 degrees. It's like half snowing, half raining on us. We've got our suitcases with us, and we're walking down this 2 kilometer stretch of road that's just got freight trucks on it. No tourists in this area at all. And halfway along, this random Russian woman appears with a shopping trolley that has boiling water and instant coffee. And she's like, do you want coffee? And we're like, this is the best day of our lives. Also the worst. So we got instant coffees. We've got another kilometer to go. We get to the Ukrainian border. The woman at the Ukrainian border is just like, what are you doing here? Like, how did you walk from Belarus to Ukraine? We're like, hello, can we please come to Ukraine? And this woman was just like, this doesn't make any sense. Where did you come from? And we just kept saying, Belarus. And she's like, where are you going? We're like, Ukraine. And she just gave up and was like, yeah, go, let us in. The ATM at the border didn't work, and there was no money changer. We only had Belarusian rubles and US dollars, and you cannot use Belarusian rubles outside of Belarus. So we basically had no money. Went through immigration, met a lovely gypsy man who was like, hey, guys, are you going to Kiev? I have 5 extra spots in my van that's filled with these weird looking ladies and a bunch of TVs that look like they could have been stolen. So he was waiting to go through. Yeah, it was perfect. And so he charged us like a minimal amount to drive to Kiev, but we had to wait for him to go through customs. So in the meantime, we went to a cafe just next to it. And there was a man in there, and we were like, please, please let us use US dollars. And he was like, oh, okay, where are you guys? He was quite reluctant at first, but then he's like, where are you from? Like, from Australia, but I live in Beijing. And he's like, oh, really? My son lives in Beijing. He's a famous DJ in Beijing. And we instantly became best friends, and he gave us all this free stuff. And like, he was like asking us to help him feed his 3-legged dogs that were hanging outside the cafe. The whole thing was just really weird. And he like let us wait in his cafe with free coffee until the gypsy man came past through customs, and we got in his car, and then finally just got into Kiev after like 20 hours of no sleep and just the most bizarre transport mode ever.
Amazing. So if someone wanted to do that experience, like, how would they?
I would advise to let's just have a proper Belarusian visa. It was fun, but like, after getting into
those things at the time that you're like, this is the worst thing ever, and then in hindsight it's quite funny.
Well, even at the time we're like, this is the worst thing ever, and then the Soviet military jeep rocks up and they're playing that music, and we were just like, all right, this is so beyond bizarre that it was awesome.
Oh, well, there's like weird things.
Oh, you can't
quite really explain how these things happen.
Yeah, you see some cool
stuff. Just stop for a second, you look at your friend, and you'll be like, what's going on?
That pretty much, that pretty much was the look we all had on our faces. We were like, guys, are we dead? Is this a dream?
Yeah, it's a long story with me getting arrested in Paraguay with my friend.
Nice.
So this guy that looked like he was going to rape me, and being like,
what?
Do we give them some money, or is this even really happening?
Did you actually get arrested in Paraguay? That's fantastic.
Yeah, we just didn't pay for a hotel that we hadn't stayed in, so it seemed fine, but apparently, no. So, yeah, that was an annoying thing to get arrested for. We were on the border with Brazil, so, yeah, after we were out of prison, we kind of round tripped, so it's fine.
Nice. Well, there's a story.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. But yeah, definitely a kind of moment where you're like, is this going to be okay? Is this happening? I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, back to being a tour guide. So you were actually a tour guide on that trip?
On that one, yeah, part of it. So that one's part of our Eurasia trip. So we have like a few guides that have to swap in and out because it's a very, very long tour. So no one can do like a tour for 48 days straight.
Wow, cool. Mm. Okay, so in general, when it comes to being a tour guide, what would you say is the hardest thing?
The hardest thing is probably making sure everyone in the group is catered for. So often, because of the places we get quite awesome people coming on our tours. Like, people are generally quite well traveled, or they're just very, like, we get very, very lovely people coming on our tours. Say if you have like a group of 20, there's 19 of them will be absolutely awesome. But it's when you have that one person that is either difficult for me as a guide, as in they're just making my life hard, or they're being really bad to other customers and making the whole like cohesion of the group not really work. So like the tour, no matter what destination you go to, the group basically makes the tour. Because if you get a group of people that just don't speak to each other, then it's really boring. But if you get a great group like we have right now, it's super fun.
Yeah, but it felt like you were putting quite a lot of work in, and you kind of stayed in like different parts of
us. Yeah, well that's a part of it. You have to, even if there are people that I might not generally like, I still have to put effort into speaking to everyone, getting to know everyone. And well, there's like mentally we set kind of goals. It's like, all right, if I'm going in on the train, by the end of the train ride, I should know everyone's name on that took the train with me. By the end of the first day, I should know everyone's first name.
How do you go about learning people's names?
I normally do it by nationality. Yeah. So like I can easily devise people from like I know where they're from. And then if they're from Australia, I find it really easy just to remember their names because they are my fellow countrymen.
Yeah.
And then
I can't remember any of the guys' names even though I got rated with first day and
to be honest, for me, remembering the Koreans' names is the hardest thing because I'm like focusing on the customers and these guys I've worked with many, many times before, but especially with the Koreans, they always say, hi, my name is Mrs. Kim or Miss Kim or Mr. Kim, and you're just like, and so like you see them and they're like, hey Ben, do you remember me? I'm like, next to Kim, and they're like, yeah, awesome. I'm like, God, there was a 30% chance that that wouldn't go that way.
What's the favorite thing?
Well, really, it depends from group to group, because if you get a group of people that say don't drink, then you just have to then rearrange the itinerary in a way that isn't like after dinner, let's go to a bar. Instead, it'll be, okay, let's go to a bowling alley or something. Or you need to find activities that really cater to people's interests. And in a place like North Korea, that can be quite difficult sometimes when we need to get pre-approval to go anywhere. So it's that's a difficult one to do. So that's why the hotel we're staying in is so good. It's a very easy option to come back to the hotel at nighttime, yes, because there is so many things people can do. They can get a massage, they can go to the pool, they can go to the bowling alley, the karaoke room, or they can go to one of the 17 billion bars that are in this hotel. I have to pump myself up the most because I've done this so many times. It's like, yay, let's go see the Jeju Tower again. Like, sometimes it is like, I love doing it. I love coming to Pyongyang especially, but to do the same, when you do repeat tours over and over again, it's like, all right, come on, let's do this. Everyone,
experiences. I guess it's better than like mailing all day, every day.
But that's what I do when I'm back in Beijing.
Yeah,
okay. So we're like, please put me on tour.
Yeah. You find that it makes you drink and smoke more then if you're trying to have going the whole time?
A little, I'd say, I like the smoking thing, I'd say, is partly due to the Korean culture, because a lot of the men here smoke quite a lot. And it's a very common thing. Whenever I go and start a conversation with them and go off to the side and talk to the guys, I will always offer them a cigarette. And it's just a very cultural thing. Like, as a younger person as well, I will always offer a cigarette to the older gentleman on the tour, like for the Koreans, say the driver, the camera, because like that's just how we build the relationship as a foreign travel company as well. If they see that we treat their guides well, then we get given the good guides.
Yeah. So, like, what would you do if you wanted a smoker? Would you just still offer them a cigarette but then not smoke yourself?
I buy them a packet of cigarettes in the morning, and just hand and like give them a packet of cigarettes. It's just like little things. And then for like the drinking thing, like I do drink a bit, but as a guide, like we never get completely like wasted at all. Like we'll have fun, but we always need to be at a level that if something does happen, we can like switch into tour guide mode straight away and deal with any problem that comes up.
Also, like often you need to be the first person to start drinking.
It really depends on the tour. Some people get straight into it and I don't have to say anything. Like, it's normally a good icebreaker for a lot of things, but we will start to see with the meals in Korea that beer is just a standard that's offered with every meal. Koreans do like to drink.
What is your favorite question to ask people when you like icebreak or the gag?
Apart from where you're from and things like that. If it's a North Korea tour, like what made you interested in coming to North Korea? Because that generally gives you a bit of an insight into what type of customer they're going to be. They'll be like, oh, my mate went on it, so I thought it would be cool. Or when it might be a customer that might be a bit more weird, who sometimes you get people who are very, very into socialism and communism, and they'll be like, oh, yes, I really, truly believe in the Juche.
What did they ask you when you
opened? Wasn't at the time when I talked, it wasn't like a particular, like, own interview or anything. Like I spent a bit of time with the guides when I was on tour, so they had spent a week with me as a person and saw who I was personality wise and they saw me use my Chinese skills before, and they knew I could speak Mandarin, so it was kind of just like, come up and see how you go with some of the work, and basically trial by fire, throwing you into a bunch of the tours. Did well, and then they kept me.
What would you say is the biggest risk you ever take?
Leaving my job as a tax consultant. I did a master's in finance and then had a grad job lined up at EY, which is one of the largest accounting firms in the world. So fantastic position to walk into. And I also took out a personal loan to do a big trip around the world. That was when I did the North Korea trip, and I did that just after my master's before I started my grad job. I was like, don't worry, it'll be fine. I'll pay it off within 2 years doing this grad job. And I just got to a point where I was like, oh, this is not for me. So leaving that and now doing this, where the pay is definitely not as good, but the experience is awesome, but it's also a bit more uncertain about what could happen in the future. And
definitely. I guess you don't have a lot of
problems. Not really when I'm on tour, but everyone likes nice things, Sam.
Yeah, so do you still have like a flat that you pay for?
YPT pays for our flat in Beijing. Yeah.
But
I just decorate it with plants and I bought a strobe light recently just because I'm so bad with money. But it's China, so it's extremely cheap. So
excessive.
It does, but it was only like $10. So absolutely worth it. Beijing can be a little bit depressing sometimes. Yeah. So we just thought we'd liven it up.
Yeah, it is a bit big and
smoggy. Yeah. Yeah. We bought it for the smoggy days when we don't want to go down.
Yeah, what do you miss the most when you're in Beijing?
Bread.
Yeah.
Bread and cheese. Like, honestly, that is such a killer.
Oh, Vegemite then.
No, I have Vegemite at home in China. Yeah, Vegemite's easy to get. I can last a while, but like just real bread. The beach. Yeah. I really miss it. I grew up a like 5 minute walk from amazing beaches. So for me, like being that and just being active, like it's when you have days that are smoggy, like you can't go for a run so many days of the year because the pollution is too bad. And I'm used to coming from this place where I could run down to the beach, go for a swim and then run home. And
it's nice Australia.
Yeah. So expensive.
So why do you think more and more people are doing adventurous holidays?
I think the market's already saturated in so many of the normal tourist places, say like Thailand or Russia and stuff. And people are researching a lot more, like more interesting places, because everyone's done Bali. Everyone's been
to Bali last year and was like, oh God, I hate it. Oh,
yeah, I know.
Everyone was like, oh my God, there's so many Americans. And
it's Australians just as well. Yeah. And I just think like people kind of go there and they see like it's like Europeans going to Ibiza or something. Cool, I could go there for a weekend or something. But people start to get more and more off the beaten path. Like I think for Australians it tends to start with going to Southeast Asia and they go through Vietnam and stuff and they're like, oh, this is really cool. Like, and so they look for that next adventure, like what's going to be the next untouched one. And so
can I go somewhere to take a photo? I don't have to queue up to go.
Exactly. And I think with I think a lot of it has to do with Chinese people, because there's such a large middle class of Chinese people that are traveling everywhere now that it's not just Westerners that are going out of their way to find different places. It's also, there's a large market growing from developing countries.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, so first in my gap year, like almost 10 years ago, it feels like tourism's exploded.
Oh, it's nuts. Some of the places I go to, even some of the countries I go to, like I've been to Kyrgyzstan twice now. First time I went, I was the only person in the hostel, given it was winter, but went back about a year and a half later, and there's so many tourists and people that had been there multiple times before, and they weren't from like Russia or neighboring countries, they were from Canada or Brazil and stuff like that. A lot of countries are also opening up their visa regime, so before it used to be really hard to get visas to so many countries, but people developing countries are realizing that tourism is good for business.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think YBT will be expanding a lot then.
Yeah, yeah. So we're looking to, we already are expanding a lot into international stuff. So I'm going to find the next weird and wonderful place that we can go. So
yeah, have you ever thought of doing like Arctic tours?
We've already done Antarctica once before. We're looking into doing Greenland next year and also possibly another Antarctic group. This year already we added Colombia, Equatorial Guinea, Papua New Guinea, Oman, Jordan, Lebanon, just so many places. Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Just hope I get to go on some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like maybe you're kind of just going to be doing mainly China?
I also do some of the Southeast Asia ones and Central Asia. So I do Kyrgyzstan and Western China. So like the Uyghur region, the Siberia. Yeah, it's awesome. It's an interesting place. I do Siberia. I'm going to be doing Papua New Guinea this year as well. And then I did Myanmar last year too.
Myanmar just after this.
Myanmar is fantastic. I've been three times now. And that is one place where you see tourism absolutely exploding.
Yeah, I had 5 years ago. It was like great.
It's still fantastic. It is fantastic. They need more tourism to come because the accommodation there, like the quality of it is still a little bit crappy for the price. But like the first time I went was a couple of years ago, and then I went back in, it was December this year, I was back there and I was like, where the hell did they get a shopping mall from? Like just appeared, and it's a grandiose, and you're like, wow, in 15 years this place is going to be Bangkok. Like, but hopefully, like it's still quite pure compared to Bangkok. Like they don't have any of the filthiness yet.
So if you were going to start a tour,
so many choices. I'd pick a place that would have like a national celebration, like National Day, like Kyrgyzstan Independence Day. Like going somewhere to a random country and watching the local population just kind of lose their minds for a day with fireworks near some national monument always makes a tour start off really, really cool. Yeah.
I was really disappointed that I didn't have a chance to do with one of the president birthdays
of this career. Yeah. I did that last year, and that was the full military parade, and it's one of the most amazing things I've seen.
That was annoying. I think I wanted to backtrack to you, because I could ask, after your Russia-Siberia...
The one in Belarus. Yeah.
What did you learn from that?
I learned that my Russian is not as good as I thought it was. And no, it kind of made me feel like I could wing anything, really. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen. It made me a bit more more easy to be able to handle situations on the fly to do with travel. I used to, before I started doing tour guide, I used to be very, like, organized traveler, and I'd always have like an itinerary for myself, kind of where I'm going to go. I'd have my flight tickets booked for every part of this journey that I'm doing on these certain dates. And now after that, I'll be the type of person that would just fly into the capital and be like, all right, let's see what they have here, and just go with the flow.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I never really used to like do travel like that. And now I'm just, yeah, just do it on the whim.
Yeah, I felt like I had a lot more self-confidence that you're right.
Yeah.
And when things get like super scary, like, I'm a bit stressed, but I'm also a bit excited for how like solve itself. I'm like, I have no idea what's going to happen, but it will be fine somehow.
Yeah, at least.
I wonder what's going to come along.
Yeah. As long as I don't die, I guess that's okay.
That's weird. And it does make you want to do like more stupid things.
It does. It really, it really does.
Yeah, have you thought about like ever pushing it just to get away with? Or,
sometimes, yeah. Certain things came out to one of the North Koreans.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What were they like about that?
It was actually kind of funny. It was Gina, our guide.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I've worked with her enough times, and like, but being gay in North Korea is like something that's just not talked about. They kind of pretend it doesn't exist. And so they're constantly asking me, why don't you have girlfriend, blah blah blah. I finally was like, all right, Gina, let's sit down and have a conversation. I'm going to tell you why I don't have a girlfriend. She was like, oh, okay. She goes, oh, is it because you just haven't found the girl in your dreams yet? And I was like, no, no. She goes, oh, is it because you were hurt by a woman? And I was like, it's really funny, but no. And then finally got to it. And she was like, oh, okay, cool. I don't care. But for something like that, for me, it was almost like coming out again. And it's just like, no, that's not something I need. But it's just, that is one frustrating thing, being who I am in North Korea, or the countries that we go to, like, can't fully be yourself, or you have to do hide certain parts of you.
Yeah,
not respect. Traveling
around Thailand with my German friends who are both gay.
Yeah,
and I didn't realize that you couldn't be gay in Thailand, as I was trying to.
Talk you
to
can them, but, absolutely. You can.
They were full on like not saying anything in this one conversation.
I was having Thailand's with super gay. It's got some of the best gay nightlife in Asia. It does have the best gay nightlife in Asia. Can confirm.
Nice. Okay, extra recommendation. Anything else you'd like to add?
I'd like to hear what your first impression of the country is.
Yeah, I guess.
Or like, is there anything that you thought coming in that you now think differently? I mean, you've only been here for one day and we haven't seen Pyongyang.
Yeah, I guess, like I was saying about the whole seeing like the American side and sort of mental why they develop like idiots, like wasted resources and greet everyone and come from this side, like, oh, actually it's kind of nice to standing up for themselves. And it's not something that I'd ever thought I'd really ever say. It's like, oh, it's kind of nice that they built some nukes.
Yeah.
So that's probably the most surprising.
Advertisement.
Yeah.
It's refreshing. And the internet is refreshing as well.
Yeah, that's just like a really nice thing to have.
Such a good detox. I love not being able to receive emails from work.
Yeah. No work, Facebook, people.
Yeah.
You need to pay some tax at some point.
Yeah.
Good excuse.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's
cool.
Yeah, what was your biggest thing when you first
came? How normal it was.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
I mean, it's not completely normal, but how normal-ish life is in the city.
Yeah.
And I say in the city because in the countryside, it's just bomb. Seeing Pyongyang, and how it kind of functions as just a normal city.
Yeah,
its own quirky charm.
Yeah, everyone kind of just looks at you a bit, so you're like, oh, awesome tourists. And
people have become a lot more receptive to tourists in the past 2 years that I've been coming as well. That's a big change I've noticed.
Yeah. What were they like before?
People, like, they were still, like, they were a little bit curious, but some people a bit standoffish. Like, you wouldn't really see as many people, like, grabbing their children to say hello.
Mm.
And then now it happens on every tour. I've even had North Koreans now ask, can we take a photo with you? Which, that happened once. That wasn't to me. That was one of our other guides that has happened to it. We're all like, oh my God, they're really changing. Yeah. People are getting ballsy now.
Yeah, I guess they're kind of interested in us.
They're very interested. Very interested.
On the train, I sat in the compartment. I was kind of getting in this guy's way.
Yeah.
So I went and sat in the corridor. But then he just came out and sat in front of me and like watched me eating for a bit, which is a bit awkward. And I realized I had my Korean English app, so I started asking him questions for a while.
Yeah.
And he was with his family and things. But then it was a bit difficult because I could only ever ask him questions about him.
And he couldn't reply.
Yeah, so he didn't ever say yes or no. So I did kind of just give him like a random bit of, oh, open, like, a bit of a thing. And then after a while, he was just on my phone for a long time. I was like, oh, what is he doing? And then I stood up, and he was just looking through all my photos.
Nice.
Like, oh, that's really amazing. And I was like, oh, fuck it, doesn't matter. This is my sister, and this is my mum, and then I'm going to go to the toilet, just keep my phone. And
yeah.
He had a nice time just looking through, like, a Westerner's life. And
nice, yeah. That's what the train guards do sometimes as well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, show me where you've been. I want to see what Mongolia looks like, or something like this.
Cool. Yeah, it was like a split second. I was like, oh, maybe he's, like, looking for sort of some kind of, like, something that I've done wrong, or
yeah.
Like a spy. And I was like, no. Even if he is, it doesn't matter. And
yeah, exactly.
I don't think he is. He just seems generally interested.
Yeah. You saw how relaxed customs was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing. I kind of thought that they'd be way more strict on us and not the Koreans. And, that's like, they didn't give a shit.
Complete opposite.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought, like, they'd be looking through my phone. It's like, I deleted, I spoke about that book, Barbademic. I deleted the fact that I'd even read it. Like, I've got, like, a book reviews ratings. Like, I deleted that from, like, my profile.
So that is the end of the interview with Ben. It was a truly mental and brutal experience to go visit North Korea, and I would love to go back. I'm really sorry we didn't talk more about the Korean lifestyle and people, but I will go more into that in the future. Do not worry. So my main takeaways from the interview and life in general lately and North Korea. Number one, the news is both ridiculous and powerful. So the Western world paints North Korea as this land of crazy mental people that want a nuke everywhere and a nation of people oppressed and in massive suffering. But actually, most of them are pretty damn chill about everything. And they're kind of happy going about their lives and walking their dogs, taking their kids to school. They certainly live very modest lives and they don't have a lot of money as a nation. But they aren't distracted by social media and all that crap the whole time. And if you rushed in, like, trying to save them, they'd look at you like you're just bonkers and like, what the hell are you doing here? So it's kind of scary the way news controls our lives and thoughts and the way it makes us perceive what's going on around us. So we're, of course, very aware of the influence of North Korean news on its people and how that controls them. Yet we pay very little attention to our own news and its influence on us. So a really good example is that I've been reading the book Factfulness by Hans Rosling, which is one of the most informative books about the world around you could possibly read, which you should definitely read. But anyway, he gives an example of an Englishman who goes to Mexico City, which is, he's read as like one of the most dangerous places in the planet. And yet all the people in Mexico were scared to visit London because they'd heard of stabbings and crime and riots. And I've had the exact same thing happen to me when I went to Mexico. And again, when I went to North Korea, and it was just kind of funny to see the way people perceive things from different places. And actually, most people in their own place don't really perceive any real risk and are kind of chill about everything. So yeah, in general, it's just a really positive book to help you question what is the reality of what's being told to you in the news. And I think we should all question this a bit more. So on that subject, going to number two, which is question normality. So with North Korea being shut off from most of society, they have a very different impression of what normal is, which is just very refreshing and kind of funny, I guess. So as a nation of skinny people, they find fat people a really rare thing to like see and kind of funny to observe. Or when they have a train delay, this is like a perfect opportunity for everyone to practice the group dances that they do at festivals. So why would they waste time standing around for a train when they could all be dancing? That's amazing. Like, you never get that in Britain. Or they also believe that dark chocolate will make you black and that white chocolate will make you white. So number one, never buy a North Korean lady dark chocolate because that's slightly offensive. And number two, think twice before ducking into your favorite white chocolate bar or chowing down on a Milky Bar because you might just lose your tan. Something the scientists have never warned you about, is that? Yeah, heard it first here on the Growth Mindset podcast. Whoa. Anyway, number three. The world is getting much smaller. With the increasing wealth of all nations across the world and the decreasing cost of travel, the number of tourists is just exploding. So places like North Korea and Eritrea are starting to be able to have their own tourism industry as people increasingly want rare and unusual experiences beyond the normal and completely overdone options offered on package holidays where you feel like you're one of a million people doing the same thing. Now, again, going back to the Hans Rosling book, there's sort of two ways of looking at this. It's easy to see the overabundance of people at tourist attractions as annoying and a problem, but it's actually also amazing that so many people now are able to afford to take the time off work and enjoy their money and go away and relax. And we shouldn't feel so against this sort of phenomenon. And again, I was really surprised to meet North Koreans on the train into and out of China who are actually going on shopping holidays for latest fashion and things. And it was a concept that I hadn't even entered my brain as possible, but kind of awesome that it can happen. Yeah, not entirely sure exactly what my point is here, but I think it's just interesting that these things do happen and that we can be grateful for them rather than just being sort of used to the fact that in the Western world we can go and do these things and a bit annoyed when everyone else starts doing it as well. Number four, most things aren't the end of the world when stuff goes wrong, and you just don't need to stress as much. And practicing resilience is a really good way to just be happier. So what do I mean by this? Basically, traveling kind of opens your eyes in a lot of ways, as I've already shown. But one of the best things is when everything just goes completely wrong and like the most terrible things happen, and yet you still walk away from it fine. And you've had this completely bonkers experience, but life goes on. It genuinely makes you feel like there's no real point in worrying too much about anything. So like Ben's experience being stranded on different borders in the middle of the night, or my experience being arrested in Paraguay, it feels kind of like in the moment it's the end of the world. Nothing can go on after this. This is just too awful. But actually, stuff does just carry on afterwards, and it is all fine. I can only liken it to sort of analogy of, let's say you jumped off a skyscraper and you're expecting to kind of go splat on the floor, and then you land on the floor, and maybe, yeah, it's a bit awkward and you sort of have to pick yourself up and brush yourself off and you feel a bit silly, but you kind of walk off. You're sort of scratching your head wondering, like, I think I've been lied to in every single physics lesson. Like, it's fine. Like, you jump off a skyscraper and you're fine, and it's the same. Like, oh, there's a mistake and you get arrested and, oh, it's fine. You just carry on. And yeah, I think the North Koreans are actually a really good example of a people who have practiced more resilience than maybe anyone else. So whether they've had like self-imposed disasters or famines and, well, yeah, loads of crazy shit that's happened to them, but yet they do just pick themselves up and carry on. And they are kind of happier for it. Like 10 years ago, they literally all had their personal savings wiped out due to the government replacing the currency with a new official currency. They weren't allowed to swap more than like $50 of their savings into this new currency or something, which is a disaster for any normal human being and a super bad thing that the government did it. But it's also amazing that the people were able to deal with this problem and they moved on and they found happiness in their lives. And if you can get over that, you can probably get over anything. And I guess it's kind of weird, but I felt like maybe having that happen to you means that you are kind of a more happier, chill person on average, and explains why perhaps the North Koreans did just seem to be genuinely quite happy the whole time, the ones that we met. I mean, I can't say for everything, I didn't meet every single North Korean and they all spoke Korean, so you didn't really know. But yeah, it felt like they were all pretty chill. So who knows? And I felt like we can kind of all learn to at least be more resilient, whether or not my reasoning behind it is true or not. It's a good thing to try and practice. So try and be resilient. And that is now the end of the podcast. Like I said, I'm sorry for not going so deep on North Korea itself, and I will try and get another interview on that in the future. Next week, we should be having my interview with one of the hackers from the group Anonymous and his experience of hacking the World Banks last year, which is a pretty damn exciting thing to be doing and highly illegal. So cool to get some insight on that, and I hope you enjoy that episode and have a great week up until then. You've listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to reach out, I'd love to talk to you. On Twitter, I am at SamHarrisTweets, or Instagram, SamJamSnaps. Show notes, along with links to everything that we discuss, are available at growthmindsetpodcast.com. Along with information on how to get involved and blog posts on cool things that you should be aware of. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy your next podcast.